Well, hi, everybody. It's October 6th here on Education Talk Radio. It's me, Larry Jacobs, otherwise known as Larry with a Head Cold. And I guess when by time spring comes, it will be going. You can hear the snuffling and buffling in my nose. I apologize for that. What you going to do? I live in Maine. There is a price to pay for living in such a perfect spot. Okay, that is what's called a head cold. Anyway, I've got my good buddy here today, and she's like everybody's good buddy, but I'm proud to say she's mine, Dr. Goldie Muhammad from Georgia State University, one of the great minds out there, author of Cultivating Genius. We've done shows together, and when Goldie talks, as the old saw goes, people listen. And today we're going to talk about rethinking the humanities in education, or learning standards versus pursuits. Goldie's always thinking about these kind of things. She is an expert, and I just have to say this. I'll let her describe it in a minute, but she is absolutely an expert on African-American literacy, both the teaching of it and the history of it, okay? And it's absolutely fascinating what she has done her research on and the books she has done, et cetera, et cetera. I just love having her on. So I wrote that the show is a must listen, and you must listen, because, and you are doing that. Thank you, because it's incredible. All the shows we do now are archived over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's our home website of the American Consortium for Equity in Education, with which Education Talk Radio is now a full part of. If you go over to ace-ed.org, you can join our consortium, our pre-K-12 Equity Consortium. All right, it's free to all educators, anybody interested in education. Our magazine is over there, the online journal, Equity and Access, and you'll see a giant icon for Education Talk Radio podcasts. And if you click through on that, you'll see everything we're doing, everything we have done, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all linked together over at ace-ed.org. You can follow us on Twitter over at EduTalk Radio for the radio side of this, and over on Facebook on Education Talk Radio and Larry Jacobs, and then my name again for LinkedIn, Larry Jacobs. That's me with a head cold. Don't put that in there. And now, da-da-da-da-da, I got Goldie. There she is. Hi, Goldie. Welcome back. Okay.
Hi, Larry. I'm so happy to be back with you, friend. I'm so sorry you have a head cold.
I guess the good news is I have a head that proves that, at least. Okay. And
yes,
it'll stay there. It'll probably linger through April or something, but it is I remember the old Sesame Street guy, the Snuffleupagus. That's what I'm doing here. Okay.
Oh, yes.
Unbelievable. Goldie, I just wanted to, before we get into this, we are going to talk about the humanities, obviously. Just tell everybody, because the history side of it to me is so important. You're an expert on this, and that's to do with the humanities. Tell everybody about your research. Just take a few minutes and do that. It's just fascinating.
So my research asks the question, how can we learn and understand and use Black historical excellence as the model, as the playbook, as the blueprint for a way forward for education for all today, including K-12 and higher education. And so from my studies of literacy and educational development from the 19th century within Black communities, such as Black literary societies, I found that, you know, basically Black folks had five different learning standards, which they call pursuits, for education. And we have one currently. You know, they had goals of identity development, skills, intellectualism, criticality, and joy. And, you know, we typically in the Common Core standards and assessments and curriculum just focus on skill development. So I am trying to reframe education and learning to be inclusive of all five of those pursuits rather than just the one.
Well, why has that happened?
You know, I ask myself that question a lot. It has happened because we have a history of developing and structuring education that was never designed to be inclusive of the histories, the identities, the liberation, the literacies of Black children from the 1600s forward. When you study the 1600s and some of our nation's earliest textbooks, we still see the same things in education today because we have designed it to serve others and not to serve some and not others. And people profit off of a system that serves some and not all. And that's why we have kept it. Capitalism is a big part of it. Making sure people have profited financially off of the failure of black and brown kids. And so we have to be very clear of why we have that,
but,
why we have what we
actually
have.
Actually, that's a great – but let me ask that point, okay? I have some other thoughts about this, but let me ask that point. When you say people have profited from that, do you mean – in the world of education, people have profited, or do you mean that we have kept people in the dark so that they didn't know any better, so to speak? We made sure they didn't, so we could use them all through their lives. Is that what you told me? Which one?
So this is where our genius has to kick in, our intricate genius, right? Because we can easily say that yes, educational companies and educational folks. Scientists and things like that have profited based on curriculum development, interventions, and research and things like that. We can say that. But when we go deeper, if you create and if we sustain, let's just say, because we've all done parts of sustaining this education system, if we have sustained this educational system to retain it, like to keep it the way it is, and children then graduate. Now, we know children have achieved despite of, but I'm tired of despite of. Can we just not have that? But, you know, if we have graduated students in a system that didn't fully prepare them, they have less options. They have less opportunities.
Oh, without question.
Right? If you have less opportunities, you have now prison systems connected to it, jobs and economics connected to it. You have so many economical part that if we would have had prepared and in a system where students can fully live and breathe into their potential, you know, think about how many people wouldn't be profiting off of prisons because students would have had wonderful opportunities. I mean, if you just take that alone.
But you're talking, you know, when you talk about prisons, you talk about prisons. Believe me, I know the situation. I just want to make this point. In the year 2020, okay, I mean, we could have made, let's just say we weren't in control at all up until 1960. I'll just make up that year. But we could have made some moves since then to make this better. And we really haven't, have we?
No, I mean, we certainly, you know, from the 1600s forward have made progress. I mean, even our conversations that we have on a regular basis, Larry, is progress. You know, we have made progress. It's just not the systemic process. It's like Band-Aids or like added. You know, I want progress toward the walls if it was a metaphor of a building. You know, we have made progress toward the furniture and the paint color and all that. You know, we haven't made progress toward the scaffolds that hold up the building.
Wow. And of course, it all, and I just wrote down in my note here, it just boils down to respect, okay? What we have done is disrespect certain groups, okay? We have literally disrespected them. Okay, but I think the reason we did that it boils down to racism. I mean, it's obvious, you know, it's obvious, and it's just too bad. But it's horrible, as a matter of fact, and it's manifesting itself worse these days. I think, well, not worse than ever, but it's pretty bad considering we're in the year 2020. Okay, I mean, things were worse for some of those groups before this, but it's pretty crappy that it's still going on. You know, it's unbelievable. So what kind of, When you talk about black literacy, okay, from 1600s on, and those five pillars that you talked about, okay, how did they manifest themselves in the earlier years, and then they got lost in the shuffle? What happened, Goldie? Did everybody just ignore them? The powers that be just ignore them?
Well, you know, they got lost when our black, meaning black communities, black educational schools, black centered schools dissolve, black literary societies dissolve. And
when
so
was
we
that?
Still see
when
them.
Was that?
I mean, we still have, well, you know, black literary societies sort of repurposed into black sororities and fraternities and other organizations. But, you know, if you just take Brown versus Board of Education, that was very pivotal in, you know, sort of breaking up a lot of our schools and our communities. Because after that, if you move forward to the 60s and 70s,
wow.
You have
You're
a lot of community schools being broken up and our curriculum being changed to be more inclusive of the United States curriculum, you know. And then when you have the emergence of, like, state standards, that only solidified what was happening.
So we lost the cultural aspect. We lost who we were talking to, right?
Yeah, and we never use blackness as a model to serve everyone because
That's
people
true.
Are sometimes they feel dismissed or they get in their own feelings. When I say let's use blackness as a model for everyone, and it's like they just look, some people like grimace almost. And I'm just like, why? We have used Europe, and that's not even our country.
Hello. I have to say something on that. We also, if I may, disregard Asian history. Okay, and we are a Eurocentric country when it comes to this. So it's African history, Asian history is also gone by the wayside. We teach from we call it the Dark Ages, but they weren't dark in Asia; they were brightly lit. Okay, we forget about that
right.
part.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
You know, it's unbelievable. I have a question for you. Okay, and I don't want to get to some solutions to all this, but I grew up in the 1950s in elementary school and 60s, and we used to read, and you certainly know this, Dick and Jane, those early readers, Dick and Jane, and they had a dog named Butterball and a cat named something, and they played out in the yard and all that sort of stuff. Was that stuff used, okay, I went to school in Philadelphia. So am I right in assuming that every kid in Philadelphia, no matter what color they were, learned about Dick and Jane?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there wasn't like LaToya and whoever, Jefferson.
And
okay.
Goldnessar. You know, it was never like.
Goldnessar. No, there's still no Dick and Goldnessar there. There's none there. That's not happening. Don't even worry about that.
Right.
Okay. Okay, but I'm serious. Did the black kids grow up on Dick and Jane too?
Yeah, we grew up
Babysitter's
Club, and you know, we still, you know, we learned to read, and we still got joy, again, despite of, but how beautiful would it have been if we would have seen ourselves, lives, our histories, our liberation in the text that we read, and there's something that is captivating. If you even look at the research, you will make more educational achievement when you see your histories, identities, and liberation represented compared
to
that.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more, but you're saying that, and by the way, I never thought about Dick and Jane in the all-black schools. That's something that's just so bizarre to my mind, it's beyond belief. Okay, it was bad enough where I went to school. Okay, but oh my God, in the inner city in Philadelphia, reading Dick and Jane, okay, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And Butterball, imagine a dog, Butterball. Okay, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What was that cat? I can't remember. Well, Puff. The little kitten's name was Puff. Okay, all right. So it's really wild. But why are you? This is interesting. I can understand what you're saying, and maybe I'm misunderstanding it. Are you saying that we should use black-centric history for all children, or that we should incorporate it in for all children, or that we should use it specifically for African American kids?
No, so I'm saying that we should use the teachings, the understanding, the frameworks, the model, the theory.
The model.
From black history to educate all children? Because, I mean, I would love to debate, engage in a debate with someone who can argue that I don't know what child, regardless of their background, their gender, their ethnicity, their sexuality, does not need identity, skill development, intellectualism, mm-hmm. criticality, and joy, and does not deserve it. Who don't deserve that? Everybody.
They would argue that I'm no curriculum expert. They would argue that that's built into the current curriculum.
Okay, well then I'm going to, like any good researcher or scholar, I'm going to ask, show me the proof and the evidence. And I have not been able to see that. I don't just speak from even a historical perspective. I have studied all the major publishing companies' curriculum.
Oh, I know you have.
I have evaluated it. I have rewritten the Common Core. I have studied the Common Core. So I would just ask to show me evidence. And if it's there, then as we say in Islam, alhamdulillah, like that's a great thing. But if it's not, we need to do something different if you cannot produce the evidence.
I don't care what language you're saying it in. We do need to do something different, okay? Whether Arabic, English, or whatever, we need to do something different. It's incredible. So let me ask you this. Identification, ID, skills, critical thinking, joy, and what was the last one? I can't remember. Oh, intellectualism, okay? So you got those five pillars, like T.E. Lawrence, seven pillars of wisdom, five pillars of wisdom from Goldie, all right? And Goldie of Arabia here, since you just spoke in Arab, all right? Goldie of Arabia says that, all right? So is there anywhere where this is working that you've seen? I mean, believe me, I know you. You don't put stuff out there lightly. How do you know this works?
So, you know, I have a federal grant and I'm studying schools in Atlanta where we're measuring and evaluating the effectiveness. I have districts like, you know, Brooklyn North and Brooklyn, New York, you know, who have adopted the model. Districts have adopted the model, but they're still, the problem is, and they've made teachers, it's restoring the genius within teachers, the energy of teaching, you know, especially before COVID, where we still had that human, more human connection in face-to-face. You know, it's just, I would love to test this with an entire school, especially a school that isn't like, doesn't have those pressures and tied down to mandated curriculum. So the challenges are when the system is not in alignment, you're still kind of doing social justice work in oppressive walls. And it's going to be some limitations to it when you have that.
Yeah. Can you do it in a private school, like a charter school, I'm thinking of, not a private school, is the wrong word, a charter school, okay, that obviously is a public school but has a leeway with curriculum. Have you tried it in any of those?
Oh, absolutely. I tried it in the Muhammad Schools of Atlanta, which does not have anything to do with my name, but it is a black-centered education, a school that's probably been open for over 75 years. It's also a private Islamic school named after Clara Muhammad, who was, you know, a social activist back in the day. And so they have, you know, they have used it with adding a sixth goal of, you know, of course, teaching Islamic understanding. But, you know, I would love to see it more like a very controlled kind of setting where we go in deep with school districts and, with one school and go in deep with trainings and leadership support. You know, that's what I'm trying to achieve right now.
How you doing on that? Are we looking at any place that's willing to do it?
Oh yeah.
I'm Goldie. Let me just say, everybody knows you. Okay, you're famous and you're beloved out there and well respected. So I have an odd feeling this works. Okay, but I'm just trying to narrow down to, can we prove that? Okay, so what's going on? Do we got school districts?
Yeah, and we have to collect data. So, like,
yeah,
Chicago
exactly.
is interested and other
Good.
Schools. And so we're just waiting. But, again, the leaders have to feel less relief from those state mandates
yeah.
and pressure.
Yeah.
And some of it is self-imposed, but some of it is, like, it's there.
Oh, it's there.
Yeah,
it's there. It's unbelievable. But this is an odd question. What would change? Well, A, what grades are we talking about? And what would change in any given curriculum? Okay, you could push the. I mean, this model would work anywhere with any kids. Are we talking about elementary? Are we talking about secondary? And if we put, what would a teacher or school district have to do to make the change? What needs to be done?
Four things need to change in the system. The learning standards, the adopted schools curriculum, the assessments, and the teacher evaluation. That's the systemic or systematic change. What needs to change in a school level is, processes. See, you have to look at your whole system from your mission statement to your parent and student handbooks to your recruitment, your interview questions. So it's a school system thing, too. And on a curriculum level, you have to evaluate and measure the effectiveness of your current curriculum, the culturally responsiveness of your current curriculum. Most teachers in school start with my lesson plan template. So they are writing lessons and unit plans redesigned with this model. That's like the easiest tomorrow first step. And it can happen despite the system, without the system changing tomorrow.
Is this all in your book? Is this in Cultivating Genius?
Oh, yeah, this is all in the book. I mean, I've given lots of talks. I have, it's funny, Larry. I revised my CV, and I was all these talks even from the summer. It was like, woo, I have a head cold just looking at that.
Right. Amazing. Now, I'm going to ask you this. It seems to me that you have these five pillars for great humanities teaching and education, okay? And what's missing, if you look at what you're proposing, and I could be wrong here, you can help me, compared to what we're doing now, I think most educators would say that skills and skills education, critical thinking education, and an intellectual side, I would hope, are included in today's education standards or whatever you want, a curriculum, whatever. But identification and joy seem to be the two things that are missing. Am I right? Joy.
Yeah, the intellect and the knowledge and the skills are there. It's usually the identity, the criticality, and explicitly the joy that we have not set learning standards around. And again, I love the word pursuit. That was a word that Black people called their goal, because a pursuit doesn't have a ceiling. A pursuit indicates
That's
learning
right.
this
always
for my
after
life.
It. You'll never get there.
Which
Thomas Jefferson said, in the pursuit of happiness. Okay? And we're still looking. When we find it, I'll give you a call. Okay, it's that simple. So I got to ask you this: these five things, how did you were they ever written down as five things, or did you ascertain this list from what you read about all the stuff, all your research? And I want you to define how joy. I want you to define how you came up with joy. Okay.
So as a researcher and a social scientist, my job is to see, is to not just look and examine, but to see, like to see what's not there explicitly, to bring to code the data and see what emerges. And so, everything is not explicitly there with the same language. So pursuits was their language. But what I did is I looked through hundreds of archival historical documents, and I said, you know what, they're talking about the goal of identity development. They're talking about skill development. You know,
that
so I, you know, those codes sort of emerge.
Yep.
And joy, you asked about joy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I first came to joy, I read several of documents to indicate joy. But there was one document that said, you know, by reading, by learning, you can converse with the wise, view elegance and architecture across the world. By learning, you can ascend to the most remote regions that can animate the human soul. So here I was reading, that was verbatim. I was reading something that they were talking about what education can do for you. And joy just came to my mind. I said, this is joy. And can you imagine writing something like that in 1837?
Yeah, think
all
about
that. All
that
was going on with black folks, you
oh
know?
Oh, my God. Try
and
mail.
That's why, like, we should be learning from this group of people, from abolitionists of the past, because if there was something inside of their humanity to still have joy and to work for the better humanity for all, not just for black people, but for all people, that is something that is very unique and special about a group of people, and we should all be studying them and learning from them.
Yeah. It's one of the things we've lost because of the racism. Okay, we've lost we've lost stuff. Okay, and just because you bump into a wall because of your own damn stupidity and ideas and all that, and it's just sad. You just lose that. All right, it's just unbelievable when you really look at it. So this can actually work. Are you writing a book on this one? How you doing this one? How you getting the
writing
word out?
A book on what?
On all the putting this all together, the five pillars.
I mean, that's what cultivating genius is. It's already out there.
Okay, so you're
my
not taking my point was I know
more,
that, but you're not taking it. You're not
oriented.
Taking it further than that. You're not going further than that. I mean, cultivating genius is amazing. Your book.
Well,
okay,
no, I'm going further. I'm writing curriculum. My next book will be going deeper into leadership practices and curriculum.
Well, actually, that's
not
actually
just
the
curriculum, but math, science, like breaking down all the contents.
Well, that's what I'm talking about here. Okay, the next step on this is getting leaders to join in the fun. Okay, and
right. That's
what we have to do. I mean, that's what we have to do. And I have to ask you this. What have you seen regarding COVID and all of this? Okay, we're in a whole different world now.
Well, you know, I've seen teachers start to take steps forward. Those who are just getting started, you know, they try two of the pursuits, of the five pursuits, you know. Some who are more ambitious who have already started this work, been doing this work, they'll try all five. And, you know, and remember, like, you're teaching all five across a unit plan. It's not all in one day.
Yeah,
and so I think teachers, I'm finding that the teachers who are not letting the pressures get to them where it's affecting their mental health, they're teaching something that sets their soul on fire during COVID. And they're like, you know what, this is an opportunity.
Oh, I agree with that. I agree with that. This is an opportunity. I couldn't agree with you more. It's just, the whole thing is just, you got to make lemonade from these lemons that we've been handed. And I think this is one of the ways we've just got to do it and make it clear. And again, to me, it boils down. There's another thing I want to ask you, and this is, Goldie, incredible. I've been into a thing, okay, I've been in touch with friends from Johns Hopkins, about rigor of curriculum, that the more rigorous a curriculum is, the better kids will do. I don't care what kids we're talking about. Do you agree with that? The rigor of a curriculum?
Yeah. I mean, I think people need to rethink rigor. That's another word that has...
Like joy, yeah.
Yeah, that's another word that has a lot of negative connotations to it. But
I'm looking
through
it as a positive.
I believe that this model is more intellectually rigorous.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it as a positive. I got to tell you, because to me, and I use that word before, disrespect and all that sort of stuff. All right. When you people would look at a class of all black kids from the inner city, and I'm not kidding you, and they would make the assumption they can't do the heavy duty work. All right. And I know that for a fact, because I've told you this before. Where I went to school in Overbrook in Philadelphia, I was together with all the black kids in homeroom. And the minute the real classes started, all the white kids went to the academics. And I guess the black kids went to trade classes or business classes or something. It was an assumed thing. OK. And of course, quote, they couldn't handle that. They're not smart enough. End quote. OK. Or something like that. End paraphrase. All right. And it's a sign of disrespect. OK, that's what it is. Oh, these kids can't handle that. And I'm saying they can handle it. OK, and I still think that's a challenge out there.
The
more rigorous the curriculum. Yeah, that's why we got to stop graduating kids.
Yes.
We got to stop graduating kids. OK, from all the big inner cities, and they get their high school diploma and they can read at a fourth grade level. No, they're capable of reading at a 12th grade level. OK, they just somebody gave up on them. Okay, it's that simple. These aren't stupid people we're talking about. You know? That's what I believe in rigor.
You're right. And that's why we have to just reframe it starts with ourselves. That's a reminder. You have to change your thinking, your beliefs, how do you really think of the limitations that we sometimes put on children? Because model is more rigorous, right? And our students are capable. Some teachers say that they're not capable because what they're really saying is that I am not capable as a teacher.
That is a great statement. That's a great statement. Yeah. And you know, we use that word. Here's another word we use too lightly, is teacher. Okay. If the kids aren't learning, we're not teaching. Okay. If a teacher can't get a kid to read at a 12th grade level, okay, they don't deserve the word teacher because they're not teaching, because nobody's learning. You know, it's that,
right,
it's that
exactly.
simple. Oh, you know, it's so amazing, and the whole thing is, like you said, systemic. Most people have the best of intentions, but we somehow screw it up. Let's go. ID skills. Critical thinking, the joy of learning, the joy of education, and intellectualism. And you put those things together, you get Goldie's curriculum, and you wind up with a genius at the end of the game, at the end of the hour, right?
Right.
Goldie? Thank you, Goldie.
Yeah, can
you
hear me?
You are a genius.
I said yes.
Yeah, I can.
Correct.
Yes, I did hear you. And, you know, it's amazing. Okay, are you hearing good things out there? Like changes in the wind?
I'm hearing wonderful things. I'm hearing, you know, tomorrow I'm speaking to a U.S. Senate committee on this work. I am talking with the Schomburg coming up. I'm seeing folks talk about my work in interdisciplinary settings.
I love that.
It's a beautiful thing, and I'm hearing – I'm seeing, like, beautiful lesson plans and curriculum. So, yeah.
Yeah, make those senators get up off their tushies and get to work and understand something.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Really, I'm proud of you, Goldie.
You know, I got about 5 minutes to talk, and I'm going to try to make those the most powerful 5 minutes of my life.
It's going to be the most powerful 5 minutes they're going to have during the day, and I hope they pay attention to you, okay? Because believe me, you know how much – well, you know what I think of you, how much we love you here, all right? I'll let you go, my dear. You're wonderful. You just come on anytime. We can have these conversations. You bring out the best in me. What can I tell you, Goldie?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I love our conversations, and I can't wait for the next one.
We're going
to
have it.
There's always so much for us to talk about.
I love it. Love having you on. So anyway, in the meantime, stay safe in Atlanta, okay? Please stay safe, okay?
Okay, I will. Thank you so much for all that
Thanks,
you do.
Thanks, Goldie. Thank you. Back
Bye-bye.
At you. Bye-bye. Goldie Muhammad, everybody. Like I said, do I need to say more? Okay. Goldie's amazing. It's Goldie, Muhammad, and Goldie is G-H-O-L. D-Y. She said her name earlier, Golden Sar. Okay? but everybody calls her Goldie. Okay, down at Georgia State. She's amazing. Okay, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. Join our equity consortium. These are the reasons why. Okay, you heard it on the show. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thanks for listening.